I am Martin. Good to talk to you again.
I think this is like a part two, Stephen, of the show we done last week. And you guys were above in the High Court, I believe, on Wednesday, just gone. Can you tell us what brought you guys there and what happened, indeed, on Wednesday?
Yes. To the people who have already heard the first part of your show, and it was quite a lengthy explanation of the events that happened last Wednesday, September the 2nd, in Castlebar Courthouse. A summary of what happened there would be that myself and a man called Colm Granahan had issued private prosecutions. Now, I've got to emphasize this, criminal prosecutions, not civil prosecutions as reported in a couple of the papers that carried the story, but private criminal prosecutions against Mayo County Registrar and a Garda Sergeant for their roles in a series of assaults against members of the public earlier in the year. And again, all of this is up on the Integrity Ireland website, and especially the Facebook page. There's videos up there for anybody who's interested. Most of those videos are short. They're between 4 and 9 minutes.
Yeah.
So, you know, people should go and have a look at that and see exactly what happened. But the long and the short of it was that on the day, that's last Wednesday, we had Judge Kevin Kilrain. Now, Judge Kevin Kilrain is the very same judge who signed my summons against the Garda Sergeant. Now, I'll hold my hand up first of all to say that we are learning as we go along. And there are certain procedures written down which we are supposed to follow in order to complete this process, you know, this prosecution process. Now, these processes are relatively simple. But we were, to a certain extent, relying on the court service informing us of what to do, especially in circumstances, as we say in legal terms, especially in circumstances where, for example, I got an email from the local court service office manager, a man called Peter Mooney, who was also in the court with Judge Kilrain, advising me that I had to bring the original summons with me into court last Wednesday. What he didn't tell me was that I was also obliged to send a notice to the Garda Sergeant that he had to be there. Now, our argument was, well, we've already subpoenaed the Garda Sergeant to be there. Now, this was a summons issued in his name, which we delivered correctly and properly, so absolutely he was supposed to be there on the day. Now, this is the second summons that this sergeant had received, and it was the second time in sequence that he had not turned up at the courtroom. And as I said in the short video, every man and every dog in the street knows that if you and I or anybody else, any other normal person, you know, member of the public or whatever, is subpoenaed to court, if you do not turn up, a warrant is issued for your arrest. It's that simple. Now, we had a big a confrontation, really, with the judge, who was doing his best to ignore all the pertinent questions we were putting to him. And we were saying to him, why isn't Fintan Murphy here and why isn't the Garda Sergeant? They were subpoenaed to be here. And he refused to give an answer to that. He kept trying to read out a High Court document, which had been served on Colm the evening before, at 9 o'clock in the evening, in an obvious, and I mean, and I want to say obvious, so obvious that it's almost comical, an obvious attempt to obstruct proceedings and do, in some manner or shape or form, stop us from holding a Garda Sergeant and County Registrar to account for their actions in the witness box. I mean, that's what this was, this whole exercise, in my opinion, and again, you know, it's open to the debate and discussion, but in my opinion and that of everybody involved in it, it's clear that the establishment has decided that under no conditions is Manning & Co, you know, Manning and his merry men in Integrity Ireland, going to get the opportunity to embarrass one of their colleagues, you know, in the corridors of power, in the witness box. Now, that's what this is all about. Now, the upshot of the proceedings last Wednesday, as most people know by now, is that after about 40 minutes or so of exchanges between the judge and myself and Colm, and, I might add, a great many of dissenting voices in the courtroom, reports again, the newspapers reported about 20 members of Integrity Ireland present. It was closer to 35, actually, but some people are not literally signed up members, but they would be what we call support members, which means they've given us their phone numbers and email addresses and want to be kept up to date with what's going on.
Yes,
but they haven't,
yes.
You know, they haven't filled up. So, sorry, Martin, I might be...
No, you carry on. We just want to get the profile of why How did you arrive in court Wednesday?
What had happened? I'll just use the terms the opposition. What had happened is that Fintan Murphy, the Mayo County Register, by all intents and purposes, has hired a legal team called Ward McEllen Solicitors from Clare Morrison County Mayo. Now, this Mr. McEllen, Mr. Edward McEllen, who is a solicitor, I believe, with that company, he had somehow engineered what can only be called a secret hearing in the High Court about on the previous Thursday, you know. So this would have been Thursday, the 27th of August.
Yeah.
Thursday, 27th of August. Without our knowledge now, nobody notified us whatsoever, but without our knowledge, they engineered a secret hearing. It's called an ex parte hearing, which means they don't have to notify us. But there were so many failures and flaws of procedure and protocol that I won't even bore the listeners, listen them all. I'll summarize them as follows, though, that first of all, we were not given any notification whatsoever about this hearing. So if we had any objections to it, we weren't given the opportunity to object. So it was a one-sided hearing. Now,
yeah.
Technically and legally, maybe they were allowed to do it, but clearly it goes against the principles of natural justice that they would have been allowed to do that. Secondly, you know, it's done during the court holidays. So we're to believe now that a High Court judge made herself available, I haven't got a second name, but a High Court judge, Lafferty, I think, or Rafferty, I'll have to double check, but a certain Mary Lafferty, we don't know a lot about this woman, but she made herself available apparently to have this closed hearing, whereby we are to believe that these solicitors alleged that the judge who signed the summons against Fintan Murphy, now this is a district court judge called Conal Gibbons, that he didn't follow proper procedure, and therefore they had a right to challenge the fact that we were requiring Fintan Murphy to be in the court. Right? Now, it does get complicated, and I really don't want to bore the listeners with a lot of unnecessary detail about the convolutions of the Irish justice system and how easily they can be perverted, subverted, cast aside, twisted, manipulated at will by the people who, quote, know the rules. And I might add, quite frankly, most of the time know they are breaking those rules.
Yeah.
But when they're up against lay litigants, they know they've absolutely got the upper hand because, you know, they own the pitch, they own the referees, they own everything on the situation. And we are learning as we go along, and we're learning more and more all the time. And we are, frankly, we are horrified at the routine abuses and the callous, what would be the right word? I'm sorry, I'm a bit short on the words here tonight. But the callous attitudes of all of these very highly paid people in positions of authority and power and trust, and public trust, as they smugly go about robbing us blind and breaking all their own rules, doing it in the process. But to get back to the original question, Martin, how and why we ended up in court on the 9th. Well, people will know that the hearing on the 2nd in front of Judge Kevin Kilrain descended into absolute farce.
Yeah.
He exited the court in disgrace. He really had no choice because there was an uproar in the court, people shouting and telling him to get out. And after he exited in disgrace, we appointed our own judge.
Can I just say something there, Stephen? Yeah. Just on that one point.
Yes.
That was a perfectly formed act of direct democracy you guys done in that court that day, when you guys appointed your own judge.
Yes. Now, of course, the people who know the Constitution will argue that the Constitution states that judges have to be appointed in accordance with the government, the rules and the regulations. And, of course, the rules and the regulations are skewed in such a way so that basically the government can handpick their own people. And that's the status quo at the moment, is that I think Shane Ross pointed it out about a year ago in a Dáil debate, that 5 out of 6 judges when they're appointed are serving members of the current political party. And it's a clear and open travesty, you know, and again, just another slap in the face to the public and this concept of us living in a proper democracy, that the Judicial Advisory Appointments Board, which has been in existence now for 11 years, and which we are told, or we're led to believe by the powers that be, is there to ensure that judicial appointments are done properly, and, you know, and it's only the right types of people are getting in. And we then find out that in 11 years of existence, and I must say that this involves all the presidents of the various courts and a few other highly placed people, that like the Attorney General and so on, you know, and in 11 years of existence, they haven't done one single interview, not one.
That does not surprise me, Stephen. That does not surprise me.
Yeah. But anyway, so on Wednesday last, the judge exited the court in disgrace. There's no other explanation or description for it. There was a dozen guards in there. The guards had clearly been told not to lay a finger on us. We did then, we issued a citizen's arrest against the judge. We asked the Superintendent Joe McKenna to enforce the arrest, and he just stood there with a, what can only be described as a sort of a, and I don't mean to be personally rude to the man, but it was a stupid look on his face, you know, that sort of a grin, it's not a smile, a sort of a tight-lipped, closed-mouthed sort of grimace. Yeah. And just staring fixedly forwards, because they have, you know, he's obliged to accept a citizen's arrest. If we make it, he's got to take jurisdiction for it. But he wouldn't. So then we asked for a Garda sergeant to come forwards and arrest the superintendent for not doing his duty. And of course, you know, the guards all just, you know, stood there with varying expressions of dismay, confusion, bewilderment, and embarrassment, you know. And again, you know, no offence to the rank and file guards there, because they're in a very awkward spot. You know, that obviously, you know, tell somebody to go and arrest their direct superior, you know, it's a tricky one, you know. But we were just, again, we were demonstrating the point that, you know, and in a very clear and open term, when a judge comes out and does something shockingly, appallingly unjust, unfair, and then we raise an objection about it, you know, that there's no way of holding the man to account. You know, we've just heard from Minister of Justice Francis Fitzgerald, she puts it in writing to TDs Claire Daly and Mick Wallace after we lodged a petition to impeach a local judge. Now, this petition had 700 physical signatures on it, plus reference to thousands of other signatures online in support for this impeachment. And her response was to say, "I have no role to play in this process."
Arrogance.
I know, she's the Minister of Justice. Yeah. I wrote back, she hasn't responded yet, I wrote back to her and said, "But you're the Minister of Justice, you're a member of the Dáil, you're a member of the Cabinet, and it says clearly in the Constitution, in order to impeach a judge, we have to have a resolution in the Dáil, and in the House, and, you know, the other House of the Oireachtas as well. Where do we start, if not with the Minister for Justice, and send the petition through TDs, you know? And, you know, that's it, and all the paperwork is returned. Like, you know, to use it for toilet paper, folks, you know? Because she's not going to do anything with it. It galls you to listen to this sort of hypocrisy and denial of duty. But anyway, I keep straying, and I'm sorry, Martin.
Not at all, Stephen, you far away.
So anyway, here we go. So what had happened the other day, Judge Kevin Kilrain, he said to me, did you issue a notice to the Garda Sergeant to be here? And I said, "Judge, you know, this is all over the internet. We have subpoenaed the man to be here. He knows he's got to be here because he didn't turn up at the last one. And we've lodged a complaint about the fact that he didn't turn up at the last one." The reason we were given then was that the court service manager, Peter Mooney, said, "Oh, he doesn't have to be there if he's not on the list." We said, "Well, why isn't he on the list?" And they said, "Oh, you didn't do something again." So we're there at the counter talking to this court service manager. And he's not telling us but they're sending us an email telling us something else to do. We go ahead and we do that. And then we find out that that's not adequate for the circumstances. And we said to the judge, "But Judge, this is ridiculous. The man has been subpoenaed to be here. And he isn't here. We've got a dozen other guards here, but not this Sergeant Hanley, you know? The subpoenas." We were saying, "Yeah, well, he hasn't turned up, okay? Now, he's not physically there. And instead, there's a barrister and a solicitor there representing Fintan Murphy. And of course, no one representing the guard. And the judge just says, 'No, I'm throwing this out.'" And I said, that's grossly unfair. And again, the media did not report the fact that these guys had not honoured a legitimate subpoena, both of them. What they did report was that I'd failed in some format in the process, and the judge said that the guard is entitled to his rights. But what about the absolute rule that if you're subpoenaed, you are there? You know? What about the fact that this common informer legislation predates the Irish Constitution and the formation of the Irish state, and that a Supreme Court judge, Justice Kelly, wrote an article about this defending the right to private prosecution, in where it stated that even the DPP can't stop this process going ahead. The DPP herself, Claire Loftus, could not have walked into that court and said, this has to stop. She hasn't got the right to do it. She hasn't got the power or the authority to do it. But somehow, through this coalition of trickery and clandestine activities going on behind the scenes, secret High Court hearings, and then a so-called service on Colm at 9 o'clock at night, just before he's going to retire from bed, getting ready for the hearing in the morning, he gets issued an envelope. No original is shown him. That's another breach of protocols and rules. The judge wouldn't pay any attention to that. There were scribbles all over this document with people's names crossed out and then written in with pen. So clearly the document had been altered after it had been issued. Yeah, and these are things. If I try to serve a subpoena on you, Martin, I give you a copy of the document and I have to show you the original. Say, this is the original. Here's a copy. You've been served. Now, when you do that, that's proper service. No. If I just hand you a brown envelope and run off into the darkness and jump in my car and drive away, I mean, let's say you decide not to open the envelope, then you haven't been served with anything. No. What's happened is you've been delivered a brown envelope. You have not been served in the terms of due service as per court protocols, and that is grounds for the procedure not to go ahead. But again, what Judge Kilrain did was, very selectively, he decided to recognise a technicality that I had failed on, and then, in the same breath, he decided to ignore the fact that both Murphy and Hanley had not turned up in court, even though they were summoned to be there, that service had not properly been affected with this document, that this procedure had gone ahead without the knowledge of the prosecutor, who's Colm Granahan. And on top of that, we also pointed out that the affidavit that they were relying on was hearsay. There was hearsay in it, which was not only incorrect, but because it was hearsay, it wasn't even signed by Fintan Murphy. Now, I mean, this is just absolutely ridiculous. It'd be like me writing an affidavit on your behalf, Martin, sending it in. And this is what the solicitor did. He wrote an affidavit on behalf of Fintan Murphy. He then made reference to another solicitor that he had spoken to, who had told him that this, that and the other had happened in the events earlier this year, you know, when all the arrests were made.
Yeah.
And he believed that all this was true, and as a result, these were grounds for them to stop this process going ahead.
So in effect, Stephen, it's these guys that's preventing the course of justice in the court.
Well, yes, but that's been our argument all along, that there's no way. When there are these scandalous, blatant attempts by, you know, various so-called authority figures to circumvent the rules, to change the rules and everything. And once they're caught out, they direct us and they say to us, oh, I'm sorry, you've got a complaint about a lawyer, or go to the complaints department of the Law Society.
Yeah.
Joke. Farce. And again, we've got hundreds of examples of people trying to do that and being blocked, obstructed, thwarted, every single step of the way, because the Law Society of Ireland is, in effect, it is the union for solicitors in Ireland.
Yeah. And being there, Stephen, done that, it doesn't work.
It's a joke. And again, we won't go into examples at the moment about that. You know, if we need to, I can. Many, many examples of them. You know, and you can see them at their desks laughing up their sleeves at us. These people think they're following a process, a complaints process, and they put all these all these conditions on it. You must fill this out and it must be in by this certain date and all these details must be included, and if they're not, we will dismiss this issue. You know, it's all geared to suit them, and the poor, you know, person making a complaint who's already been victimized by a rogue lawyer, maybe had thousands upon thousands of euros stolen off them, or land, or whatever the issue might be.
Yeah.
And then they try to go through this process to make a complaint, thinking they're dealing with some sort of a authority body that's going to actually do something about it, only to find out, literally, 2, 3, 4 years later, that they've been the victims of a complete and utter farce.
Yeah.
And then they try to complain about those people. And that's why we're encouraging people to use this process, this common informer process. As soon as you're wronged by a solicitor, by a guard, or by a judge in particular, or by, for example, employees with the court service, some of whom are being absolutely and completely obstructive towards us at the moment. Any of those, you know, once you can clearly identify that they're doing something, they're absolutely wrong, other than, you know, a human failure or a mistake or an error. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about people who are deliberately going out of their way to abuse their positions of authority and power, either for their own personal gain or for some sort of perverse satisfaction that they get from ruining people's lives, which is what's going on at the moment, you know, or to protect their colleagues. And when we notice that they do that, we're saying to people, walk straight in to the district court and show your evidence to a judge and get a summons issued against that person, and at least have the satisfaction of facing them in the dock and grilling them, you know. But what's happening now is, you see, is what's happening is the establishment is trying now that they realize we're onto them on this, they're trying to stop to close this loophole, if we could call it a loophole, even though it's enshrined in common law and it predates the Constitution and everything. They can't just get rid of it like that, you know. It would be too difficult because they've tried in the past, and funny enough, it was the Law Society who tried. They made an effort to close down this option because, of course, as long as we can take a private prosecution in our own names, we don't need a lawyer. Do you understand? So, anyway, with what happened on last Friday was that this Kevin Kinrain was shamed out of his own court, and while he was in the back chambers trying to deal with cases one-on-one, which he's not allowed to do either, he had the guards bring in people one at a time. Some of the other cases have been heard, and we were objecting to that as well. We were telling the office manager, you can't do this, that's not a public court. And so we then appointed our own judge, and she took the seat, and we asked her, right, first of all, can we have permission to record? She said yes, so we all switched our cameras on, and that footage is up on the internet. Now, various different people have different ideas and understandings of what really happened there. As far as I know, this has never been done before. But she was, quote, democratically elected in as much as the majority of people in the courtroom voted to have that lady...
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, take the position. Now, but on the other hand, of course, she hasn't formally or officially been sworn into office by the president, but we won't get down that road, but there's discussions at the moment about how valid the role of president is at the moment under the constant the current constitution, but yeah. That's another discussion for another day. But anyway, we made a point and we drew attention to the fact that there are these outrageous activities going on under the guise of our esteemed courts and the integrity of the office of the judges and all these highfalutin phrases that they use. And we find out that they're just a bunch of clowns and tricksters and rogues serving the interests of the powers that be. You know, I mean, it's absolutely clear. There was no point going into that court that day other than to do what we did. Because clearly, the decision had been made in advance. Judge Kilrain had been told, I imagine, by the president of the district court or even the chief justice or somebody, what on earth were you doing signing that summons for a Garda sergeant to come in and answer for his assaults? You go and sort that mess out. And the only way you could do it was to try and pick a hole somewhere in the evidence to find some reason to justify him throwing the case out. Now, it's not the end of the world because there were 20, 30 witnesses to the assaults that went on and we're still well within the time limits to take proceedings. So we'll just relaunch the proceedings again and make sure that we don't make any of these errors this time and see what excuses they come up to try and stop it now. But a very dangerous loophole has been opened here. How is it that these people can go to a secret court and have a judge sign off and say there was something wrong with Judge Donald Gibbons issuing the summons against Fintan Murphy, and they're relying on hearsay so-called evidence which we can prove is inaccurate and incorrect, so much so that we're going to issue criminal proceedings against the two lawyers who drafted up the affidavit.
Absolutely.
But as you know now, what happened, and if people are still with the conversation here, what happened was these papers that were produced, that were served on Colm at 9 o'clock at night and were produced the next morning as supposed grounds to suspend our action against Fintan Murphy in the district court. The judge said, oh yes, I can't argue the high court papers. And we were saying to him, oh yes you can, because they're completely illegitimate. And he was going, no, I'm not going to. And, you know, this matter is adjourned now until November. Until you deal with this matter in the high court next Wednesday, which was yesterday, September the 9th. Now, let's look again at this in context, Martin. I would challenge anybody in the country to go in and get a judicial review ordered and have it dealt with in a week.
Yeah.
You know, this is incredible efficiency on the part of our courts and our court service. Not only that, another judge had to come in off his holidays and deal with this matter yesterday. And on this occasion, it was a judge who, I'm going to say openly on the air, who is notorious, and I do mean notorious. They couldn't have, and there was only one other judge that we thought might be picked. It was a toss-up between Michael White and Sean Ryan. Sean Ryan is the president of the High of the Appeals Court at the moment. God knows how he managed to get into that position with his record. But anyway, Michael White has a notorious record on our database, on the Integrity Ireland database, going back to the time when he was a solicitor. And all I will say at this point, rather than go into specific details, and because, again, if Judge Michael White wants to take action against me, as he's done against another lay litigant in the past, in another controversial case that he was involved in, if he wants to take any action against me, please do so, Michael. I'm right here, and I would dearly love to come into court and justify why I'm describing you as a notorious judge.
Well said, Stephen.
There are many, many people have made complaints to him about him and his dealings with them, going right back to the time when he was a solicitor, before he was fast-tracked up into the High Court and so on, you know. But anyway, he was there, and he was clearly there yesterday to ensure a certain result, and that result was that we weren't going to have our judicial review yesterday. So there was us, 60 people turned up yesterday in support. Martin, yeah. I'll say 60, 57, we've got 57 names of people who were present yesterday. Two or three came into the meeting after the court and hadn't been in the court, and likewise there were a handful that were in the court that couldn't stay around for the meeting, so I'm saying approximately 60 people. It was a great turnout. We completely filled the courtroom, and whatever kept Judge White, he was about 20 minutes late coming in. I would imagine he was probably reading the affidavits we prepared. And the first thing that we had in the affidavits, now bear in mind, we had considered not turning up at all on the grounds of what had happened in Castlebar. But then we decided, no, what we'll do is we'll turn up to show respect for due process, but we are going to absolutely nail this ridiculous hearsay affidavit that's been put in on Fintan Murphy's behalf. We're going to nail it on factual grounds. We're going to nail it on the fact that it wasn't served properly. We're going to nail it on the fact that it's hearsay evidence. He hasn't even signed. He hasn't even had taken the trouble of signing the damn thing himself, you know. And yet, a process that is enshrined in common law that has never been stopped before in the history of the state, this process is now being held up using all these fabrications and legal trickery. So, Judge White came out, and not one of our affidavits ended up getting read out on the day because he just started having a conversation with the opposing barrister. We were trying to ask the barrister who he was. He wouldn't tell us. Eventually, we basically forced him by making a bit of a furore, you know, like I say, in the court, and standing and saying, why wouldn't this man? And he said, please identify. And he's already identified himself. Said, well, we haven't heard his name. So we managed to get the name of the barrister. He looked, in my opinion, and again, no disrespect to the man. He may be a decent man. We don't know him, you know, other than turning up yesterday. But he looked distinctly sheepish as he tried to address the judge and explain what their position was. Now, Colm was the only person technically allowed to speak there yesterday. Right. And in his, you know, he's a countryman from Mayo. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, Martin.
No. I've seen Colm on the video here, and I know what you're saying. Yeah, he is a countryman from Mayo.
Yeah, he's not. He's got no legal training whatsoever. Yeah, yeah. He's not. You know, he hasn't read legal books or anything of that nature. He's just coming at this from a very straightforward, clear-cut perspective. And he said this to the judge on two or three occasions. He says, "I may not know all these ins and outs and tricks and adjournments and ups and downs and having me all over the country over the next 2 years." He says, "I'm sure that's going to happen now. I'll be coming to court hearings all over the place." He said, "All I know is I know clearly what's right and what's wrong," he said. "And if I'm expected to submit affidavits and sign them in my own name," he said, "what on earth are we doing here on the basis of hearsay affidavits, which rely on another level of hearsay from another solicitor And yes, you're stopping this process, you know. And he sort of made his point really well and then pretty clearly. But again, you know, Judge White was there for a reason, and he basically was tying Colm up in you know, legalese, and you know, he said, "Oh, my role here today is not, I'm not here to deal with X, Y, and Z. I'm only here to deal with the fact that you know, that the allegation that this was not issued properly by Judge Gibbons." And we'll adjourn this so that, and then this is very interesting. Then the barrister said they wanted to source the DAR, digital audio recording records. Now, this is a recording that we're told, and again, it's supposed to be on in every courtroom in the country during a court case. It's a digital audio recording system. Now, we've had problems with this in the past. Now, it's one of the excuses they give you for not allowing us to record in the court. They say, oh, if you need a copy of the recording, it'll be made available to you. What they don't tell you is that it's going to cost you a small fortune and several, you know, processes of paperwork, which can be interrupted with, interfered with, obstructed, blocked by the opposition at any given point if the judge wants it to be, you know.
Yeah.
On top of that, we have clear evidence of these DAR recordings being interfered with, bits being snipped out of it, transcripts being written up that do not reflect the audio, and so on and so forth. And this is one of our main objections, why we want to be able to record in courts, as you can in most other common law jurisdictions. They can record, up in the north of Ireland, for example.
But we have problems here with people on PIO trying to get the DAR recordings and can't get them. And indeed, you're probably right, they will be tampered with. So, in my opinion, if you have a recording device, I'd bring it to court. I really would.
Yeah, and now we're getting in the habit now of asking the judge beforehand, can we officially, we want it on the record that we've asked for the proceedings to be privately recorded. And they always refuse. They always refuse. We've never once yet been quoted. We've only, and this is about three times now we've done it recently. But we're going to get stricter and stricter on this, and we're going to be more insistent. We want to know the law. Well, it's in the court rules. Yes, but the courts are corporations. They're private corporations. Mm. And there's another bit of trickery that we're all being hoodwinked about, which, again, I hold my hand up to say that I don't fully understand all of the ins and outs and ramifications of this, but clearly, when the court service is listed as a private corporation whose business is, and it's, you know, it's floated in the stock market and everything, it's there to make money, you know?
Absolutely.
And, and apparently Garda stations too, every Garda station in the country apparently is listed as a private corporation. It's an incredible state of affairs. But again, I'm not claiming to be an expert in that area, Martin, but it does raise other questions about what's really going on and how much as fools are we being taken on, as you know, here. But anyway, so we said, I made two or three attempts to speak, and he came down really hard on me. I stood up and I said, friend of the court, and I was trying to get clarity on, I wanted the opportunity to say, look, you know, Judge White, you are doing something here which clearly goes against the ruling of the Supreme Court, which said that we have a right to private prosecution, and you're facilitating a process which is interfering in that. Now, are you going against this? Now, I couldn't get a full sentence out because if you sit down, who are you, you know, and pretending that he didn't know who I was and everything. So I said, you know, I told him who I was, and then he said, sit down, and as soon as there was any reaction at all from the crowd, and there was a couple of people said, hear, and he glowered at everybody and raised his voice a couple of decibels, and he said, I will not have any interruptions in this court, you know, and a real bulldog, you know, of a man, you know, and then he'd switch back to being, you know, apparently charming and very, you know, under control and everything, and then he'd bark, and, you know, so somebody said something, and he snapped at me. He said, Mr. Manning, you are told to keep quiet. You know, now, I hadn't said anything, but it was a good opportunity, and I stood up, and I said, I did not speak, Judge. And he said, sit down. I said, I want it on the record. I said, I did not speak when you just reprimanded me a minute ago. And he said, sit down. I said, I will not be intimidated by you, Judge. You know, now, then he looked over at the guard on the right, and there was a big, well-set guard. Now, we'd been over to him beforehand, and we said to the guard, look, we're not going to have any physical stuff here today and all the rest of it, but in the event that you're directed to remove one of us, we just want to let you know so that there's no confusion about this, you do not have any power of arrest in the court.
Hmm.
And he sort of, you know, shrugged his shoulders and say, you know, well, why are you telling me that? Well, so we just want you to know that it's on the record, you know. So he looked over at the guard, and as he did so, I said, there is no power of arrest in this court. and he just looked back at us. Now, it was starting to empower a few of the people. Now, what eventually we did, we said to the judge, well, look, the opposing solicitors here said that they wanted the DAR recording, and because of that, the matter had to be adjourned for another few weeks, all right? Mm-hmm. And he asked Colm, he said, how much time do you need to go ahead? And Colm said, we're ready to go now. And he wasn't expecting that, you see. He says, we're ready to go now. And then he went back to the other solicitors and they said, oh, well, we'd like an adjournment in order to get a copy of the day. It's all, you know, this is all pre-planned. Yeah. It's obviously pre-planned.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So the judge, but then they made this classic mistake. He said, when did this happen? And what he meant was, you know, what date and what time and everything. And the opposing barrister starts reading out the exact times that they need the DA recordings for. You know, he says something like, at 11 minutes past 11 and 40 seconds to 14 minutes past 11 and 20 seconds, or something like that. Right. Yeah. So, now you explain to me, Martin,
yeah,
how a barrister who has not even got a signed affidavit from the subject of the proceedings, who wasn't there present on the day, right? What did he have a stopwatch going, and did he know when to stop it and start it?
Well, obviously they have the DAR recordings, you know.
He obviously already has them.
Yeah.
So that's another pretense, another ploy, another trick. So we asked, and somebody murmured this across to us. So we tried to nudge Graham, Colm, you know, to get up and ask. And at one point, you know, we managed to get the question. Please ask the opposition how it is that they know exactly what time that they require if they don't already have the DAR. And if they already have the DAR, then clearly the court service is colluding with them in advance of this hearing, right? And he wouldn't ask the question. Judge White wouldn't ask it, you know, a sort of uncomfortable smile. And he goes, oh, I'm not here to ask those questions. We want to know, because this is again, another flawed process.
Yeah.
Why are we in here, you know? Why are you in here on your holidays doing this, you know, with the expediency of this and all the rest of it? Now, around this time now, we had two or three exchanges. Now, at this point, I said to Judge White, I stood up, I said, people have a right to know what's going on here. Sit down, man, sit down. And he was barking at me, you know. And I said, as a gesture of dismay and disaffection, I think it was the term we were. Anyway, I said, as a gesture of dismay and disapproval of what is going on here, we are turning our back on you, Judge, which we did. All 60 of us stood up, turned our backs on him and faced the wall for a minute. And as we're there, there was a sort of a hesitation for about 5 or 6, 10 seconds, you know. And then he just started talking to the barrister, you know, continuing as if nothing was going on at all. You know, it was a silent but very potent demonstration of unity and of disgust at what's being done in our names in the courts. And we thought, yeah, we thought about it earlier. We said, yes, we need to have some reaction when things start going wrong, other than, you know, storming the Bastille and hauling these so-and-sos over the thing by their ears and giving them a good spanking, which is really what they deserve, most of them, you know.
Yeah.
And no doubt that one will get me in trouble for bringing the judiciary into disrepute. My response to that will be, actually, it's not me bringing them into disrepute.
I was just about to say that, Stephen.
Yeah. So anyway, we did this demonstration for a minute. We turned round and we asked him again the question. Judge, I say we, Colm did it, you know, because every time I tried to speak, he'd start barking. And Colm asked him again, Judge, will you please ask the opposition to clarify how it is they've got all these details if they are not in collusion with the court service? And if they are in collusion with the court service, then this process should stop right now. It's clearly flawed, you know. And again, the embarrassed show, this smile that they put on as if, oh, everything's fine and hunky-dory and I'm completely in control of all this and, you know, but of course he's up there protected on the bench. There were four detectives in there as well, four plainclothes detectives. We only knew that they were detectives afterwards when all the hearing was over, you know, and they all got into a group and started chatting together, you know. But there were four men in plainclothes. We knew one of them was definitely a policeman because he was standing right over the front left, you know, clearly there to stop any members of the public accessing his worthyship, you know. And then a few people got emboldened, and a brave man by the name of Harry Price stood up, a man in his 70s, and he articulated the fact that for 30 years he'd been treated unjustly by the system, and he was being told to shut up and sit down, and he wouldn't take any notice. And this is when Judge White seemed to run out of ideas, because clearly he wasn't going to order anyone to be removed. He wouldn't have dared, I don't think, you know. Yeah. And he just, you know, put his hand to his face and sort of tried to grin and tried to pretend that it was all okay. And then another lady, Marguerite, stood up and she said, "This is ridiculous, it's a farce, it's a travesty, what are you doing, you know?" And quite a few people, you know, made, supportive comments in the background. And then another man who's one of our support members, a man called Liam, who is somewhat of an expert in the area of papal law. And again, I can't go into this because I'm not fully, you know, informed about it, but there are, again, overtones here that suggest that there's something seriously amiss with the Irish justice system. There are connections to canon law going back centuries, but that, you know, that apparently are still in force. And anyway, this Liam served a document he called it the PDF, not in the, you know, the digital format yeah. thing, but the people something document. And he served this on the county register to hand it to the judge. Now, interestingly, after proceedings had finished, the county register tried to give it back to us, and we put a film recorder on and filmed me handing it back to him again and saying, "No, you will receive this on behalf of the judge. It has been served on you." And apparently that may have also triggered off something which we're looking into at the moment to see what the ramifications of that are. But another important point to make here, Martin, is this, is that Judge White then said, you know, this matter has been adjourned to such and such a date. And again, we're fully expecting, if we comply with the process, and that's under question at the moment, but if we comply with this process, no doubt there will be another reason to kick the can down the road another couple of months, and another reason. And meanwhile, they're all sitting around in the back rooms in these secret hearings and get-togethers, working out what's the best way to stop these nuisances, you know, i.e. members of the public, from actually trying to access justice, you know. Yeah. But another interesting thing that happened was that at the end of the proceedings, and I'll say this, Judge White exited to a chorus of jeers and shouts again, not unlike a Castlebar court. A lot of the people present who were not in Castlebar were said afterwards, they said it was an amazing show of unity and it was exciting what happened and everything. I thought it was pretty tame compared to what happened in Castlebar. Unfortunately, we don't have footage of the main body of what happened with Judge Kilrain. But I think, as I said to you before, Martin, if I were trying to give a lesson or a demonstration on how to be arrested for contempt of court, yeah. that would have been it. Yeah, but the reason they're not arresting us is because I think they're aware that we have too much dirt on them. And if they arrest us and we decide not to purge our contempt, which certainly would be my case, then they would be obliged to hold a trial. And if they hold a trial, you know, we are literally going to have hundreds of people turn up to give evidence of the abuses visited on them by various members of the judiciary, the Gardaí, the legal profession, the court service, and so on. And that's the last thing they want. They can't afford that, you know. Yeah. And there is a momentum going. But anyway, at the end of it all, the barrister and the solicitor, just to put the last little nail in the coffin for this so-called pretense at a proper court procedure, and, you know, to give the appearance that, oh, yes, you know, a hearing was heard and Mr. Murphy's entitled to call a judicial review of this process. Well, actually, no, he's not. No, he's not. He should have turned up in the court on Wednesday last. Yeah. And he should then have said, Judge Gibbons didn't have the right to issue this in the first place. He should have put his objection in there in person. And you know what? We would have argued it in and out. And then if we were found to be in the wrong, the thing would have been thrown out and he could have walked away. But he didn't. What they're really saying is, we are too important to be subject to the same procedures as ordinary citizens. And if, by any chance, you try to prove otherwise, if you try to hold us account for the multiple abuses of power in a position that we are visiting on you guys smugly, laughing up our sleeves at you every day of the week, while we rake in millions upon millions of taxpayers' dollars, you know, and euros and whatever, you know, yeah. At your expense, and if you dare to try and challenge us on that, we'll use every trick in the book, in our book, you know.
Absolutely, Stephen. That's what they're trying to do. The arrogance of them. The arrogance of them to stand up down the bench because they're higher and look down at you and say this is absolutely... It's disgusting, Stephen.
They're all designed that way, aren't they? I mean, you don't have the public sitting up in a gallery like in a lecture forum, you know, where the actual tutor who's actually trying to pass information and knowledge to the students, he's down in the centre at the bottom. on the stage, so to speak, and the tears like a coliseum, you know, they rise up around, so that the participants actually gain the best benefit. No. Our courtrooms are designed to intimidate.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
There's various different tiers. That's why we keep sitting up in the front row all the time. It's a statement. We're saying, no, get out of the way. We're the rightful people to be sitting here in the front tiers, not a bunch of, in many cases, suspect barristers and solicitors.
So, Stephen, this is adjourned till October. Is that what you said?
November or something. But we're in discussions at the moment as a group as to whether or not we will comply with this process, because at the moment it looks like this is not only a flawed process, but an illicit process. And if it is, then we are not, neither are we obliged to comply with it, because to do so is to give it credence, is to sort of give it our support, you know, our tacit support. But in fact, if we're looking explicitly at the rules, it might be illegal for us to go along with this process. You see, Martin, you've got to ask the question, you know, if you're walking down the street and, you've got a friend who's a judge, and you're walking along and the judge says to you, hey, just reach over there, Martin, and steal that bottle of milk for me because I'm thirsty.
Yeah.
Right? Now, yeah, okay, he's your friend, he's a judge, you reach over, you steal the bottle of milk, you give it to the judge. You're the one who's going to be arrested for theft.
I know,
okay?
I know.
Now, in the same vein, just because they're sitting up there and all their, their atmosphere of royalty and condescension and superciliousness, and they've got all these fancy Latin terms and all the rest of it, if we know that they're engaged in an illicit process, we are duty-bound not to go along with it. And that's our main argument. Mm. Now, we're looking at this at the moment. Now, clearly, Michael White is going to be reported to the Chief Justice for his attitude and his demeanour, his refusal. I asked him, I said, I'm speaking under amicus curiae, meaning friend of the court. I'm speaking as a friend of the court. And I said, are you refusing to allow me to speak as a friend of the court? Sit down, Mr. Manning. Are you refusing? Please put on the record you are refusing to allow me to speak as amicus curiae. And that was when we did, at the beginning, sit down. But I think I was coming back to the final point. At the end of proceedings, after Judge Michael White scurried out to choruses and chants of get out of it, you disgrace, you're a shocking disgrace, and so on, and this sort of stuff. And he went out, his chambers, and within about 2 minutes, the barrister and the solicitor for the opposition, without even making a pretense of any genuine independence in this process, went into the judge's chambers as well.
Wow.
And so I went up to the registrar afterwards. It was pointed out to me, one of our guys, and I walked up to the registrar and I said, could you please tell me, is there any legitimate reason for the opposition barrister and solicitor going into the judge's chambers? And you get this look from them, you know, how dare you ask me a question as to what we are doing? Who do you think you are to question me, you know, my almightiness?
Colluding.
And I kept persisting until he, you know, I've forgotten his name now, we've got it written down though. But I persisted until he answered me. I was very polite with him. I said, I just want to know. I said, I just want to know, is there some, you know, maybe there is, maybe they were instructed by the judge to give them a paper or something. I don't know. But no. And then he said, they decided to go out that exit. I said, but it's not an exit. The judge's chambers, you see, are in the right-hand corner, which is, the only thing to the right of the right-hand corner are the windows. There are two other exits on the left-hand side out into the corridor. They didn't go out those exits.
They were colluding, Stephen. They were colluding. Listen,
it certainly looks that way, doesn't it? Yeah. You know, it certainly looks that way, and it's another point to be raised. Yeah. So, on the basis of about six or seven points that I've mentioned now in this interview, we will be arguing. And when I say arguing, I don't mean that we intend to go in and waste everybody's time again. Going along with the flawed process, but we are going to take some action. And we've yet to decide what is the most effective course of action, because we have to have a meet up now, the main people involved in this.
Yeah.
But we intend to take some action based on this, it's a clear breach of precedent. Look, if you've got the High Court, the Supreme Court, Supreme Court Justice defending the right to common prosecution, and a common and formal prosecution, for an ordinary person to be able to go in and criminally prosecute another person for a criminal offence. If he defended it, the DPP can't interfere with it. But somehow, between them, you know, a couple of solicitors and barristers that basically work for the state. You know, they're, of course, quote, independent law firms, but they get most of their business from the state. They're paid out of state coffers, you know. They now allegedly represent Fintan Murphy, a county registrar, who is a quasi-judge. And, of course, don't tell me for a moment that all of the judges in the land haven't looked at this with a little bit of a quiver in their knees, thinking, oh, my God, if this Integrity Ireland crowd can go after a county registrar, then who's next?
It would make you think, wouldn't it? There's one thing I'd ask you, Stephen, is, and this is my point, right? I can see we're running out of time here. Excuse me. But you said earlier on in the interview that we are all learning, Stephen.
Yes,
everyone in PR is learning. Everyone in Integrity Ireland is presumably learning. But we have a couple of guys here on PIR, right? We have one guy specifically, right, who can quote you verse for verse in Black's, Black's Dictionary, is it? Black's Law.
That's it, Black's Law Dictionary, yeah.
Yeah, and I definitely think you should get to talk to these guys.
Oh, I'd love to, Martin. I'd love to. The one thing I keep saying to you is, please show me a way to invent time, because, writing up these affidavits and letters to the authorities, I'm flattered sometimes at the feedback I get from some of the letters that I write. But what people don't realise is how much thought and preparation goes into them, because sometimes there's a lot of research to be done before you can write one of these letters. You have
but
to get
this, the research was done on PIR, Stephen, believe it or not. And it is still being done to this day, and it's done every day. So, I'm not going to advise Integrity Ireland what to do, but I would advise you guys to just even have a chat with these the backroom crew here. And if you are going to bring this forward, I think it would be a great opportunity, you know?
Well, yes. Now, there are, let's just say, the energy on the ground is that quite a few people, including people with legal qualifications who are, assisting and advising us behind the scenes, that they are quite excited at these developments, in light of our efforts to try and reform what is an utterly corrupt so-called justice system, And again, just as a very slight reference, I just want to make a very brief reference. We talk about our justice system. Look at what just came out in this Fennelly report with, two facts that the Garda Commissioner, Martin Callanan, regardless now of all the lead-up that's been sort of covered over and muddied, all that issue about whether Enda Kenny was involved and all of this. But the two facts that came out of it is, number one, that the SIM from his state phone, his police phone, basically, mysteriously goes missing, disappears, can't be found, all right? And secondly, that when Callanan left office, he leaves with 8 bags, or 10, even I think one of the papers reported 10 bags, or sacks. We're talking about sacks now, they're probably refuse sacks. So we're talking about 10 sacks full of shredded papers. Now, what on earth would Mr. Callanan have to hide? I mean, surely the incoming commissioner would like to see all those records so that they're up to date with cases and, the idea of a senior police official shredding 10 sacks of paper when he retires.
It's crazy.
From his offices, mind you, we're talking about. Now, we're not talking about personal stuff. We're talking about he's being paid by the state, by us, by taxpayers, to do a job. And they've just shredded 10 sacks of documents pertaining to his duties while he was in office. And what do we hear? Oh, Noreen O'Sullivan, the current commissioner, reassures us at the procedures in Templemore today. Oh, yes, I'm quite sure. What does she say? I'm not going to say that Mr. Callanan did anything improper. But just in case, we're going to appoint an assistant commissioner to look into the matter, and I'm sure all will be reported on in due course. Yes, of course it will.
Absolutely.
How dumb does she think we are?
Yeah.
And again, we're going to write to the Minister for Justice and volunteer Integrity Ireland services to do this investigation for them. Let us in there. We'll find the truth.
Very good. Stephen, we're going to have to leave it there, Stephen, because we're running out of time. And listen, I'd like to thank you. As always, you're very, very, very welcome back and let's talk anytime, Stephen. Anytime.
Well, as you know, Martin, I'm a bit of a chatterbox, and I hope I don't stray from the topic too much. But I'm just very grateful, and I say extremely grateful, that People's Internet Radio is taking the interest and, you know, making this facility available to people like me. Because, for example, just this evening, very quickly, I got a notification that a local radio station wanted me to contribute to a program they're doing on this very matter tomorrow. Now, for some reason, that call never came through. Same with the local media coverage of the event. Now, some of them are quite good, but it's very clear that pressure is being put on the, you know, let's call them the mainstream media outlets, to dumb down what is happening at the very best, and if possible, to ignore and not report on it at all. So I'm really glad that you're doing this, Martin. And I want to encourage everyone out there. You know, we have great power. As, you know, as the old man said once, you know, there are a great many of us and very few of them. We are the fools for letting them get away with this for so long. Mm. And we will be reporting on, you can expect, a great slew of these common informer private prosecutions going in now, naming some of the top authority figures in the land for serious abuses of power and position. And I think that'll be well worth asking people to watch what we're doing. Send us your email addresses and your phone numbers. Get on our database. And better still, if you've had a problem with the authorities, sign up as a formal member. Becoming a member, all we need is your signature on a piece of paper at the moment, and get into our confidential database and our confidential website, and help others to make a difference. Thanks, Martin.
Stephen, I think you guys are doing a wonderful job, and I'm looking forward to the future of Integrity Ireland. It's been a great interview, Stephen, as usual. You're welcome back, as I said, on PIR.